I think a lot of people struggle after jail. Like, I know people that they I know someone that was struggled with depression after jail because he couldn't come to terms with being not in that routine he was in. Because some people get institutionalized, they get so used to one thing and then they can't adapt to change because on the outside there's so much change going on. And some people struggle, little things. But a lot of it is financial, I think a lot of people struggle with. When you come out, it's the financial strain that people can struggle with. That plays a big part, I think.
Hello, welcome back.
How are you, Claire? You all right?
I'm good, how are
I
you?
Say, I always say the same thing every time, innit?
Yeah, we need to get you a new opener.
Yeah.
Or maybe that becomes your, like, how you doing?
You all
right? Like Joey from Friends. How you doing?
So here we are. We've been released in our prison journey. We're out the gate. We've spent the first night in our respective homes. Yeah. Freedom, or is it? I think it's like often seen as, oh, that's it. Your sentence is done to the outsider. They go, well, that's the easy bit. You're out. But I don't think it is all that easy. What do you?
For me and Rob, we were both on tag HTC. So I feel like you're definitely not free because some people say it as, nah, I'm free because I'm not in jail.
Mm.
Some people look at it like that, like kind of glass half empty, glass half full kind of thing.
It's definitely one of those, isn't it? Yeah.
But some people look at it like, fucking hell, I've still got to go probation.
Talk about the actual practicalities of tag, what it means, how they set it up, like day one, your release.
Day one out, first day out of prison, you have to go to visit your probation. So for me, I had to go like a 2-hour drive down to like Hastings, which was where my nearest probation officer was. You go there, you meet them, they go through the stuff. Then I had to get released back. So then I went back to the house where you're told to wait from, you have to be there from like 2 o'clock that afternoon because the tag people will come out. And it's like...
But with probation, I guess, sorry to interrupt, you've got license, they've told you license conditions.
Yeah.
Yep. I'd mentioned before, I think you have to do as part of it, you're told your license conditions as you're leaving and then they're reiterated to you when you're at probation. So I was not allowed to own or operate a firearm for 5 years, which was nothing to do with my crime. I think everyone gets that.
Yeah.
I'm not allowed to be a director of a company for 5 years. And then I was not allowed contact with anyone for my case. And it still is a condition of my parole without the express permission of my probation officer. So there's stuff like that going through.
And on tag, you had a curfew.
And then, so then obviously you're then told the conditions of your tag. So I was between the hours of 7 p.m. and 7 a.m. had to be at the house. And then obviously they come and fit the kit. So you get the guys come out, they're like a G4S or similar kind of contractor. They come and, well, I mean, because of the house I was staying at, it was in the middle of the countryside. The guy turned up like at 9 o'clock at night, came out, started immediately shouting at me about not being able to find the address. And I was like, well, hang on, mate. It's not my fault. So he didn't get off to a great start with me. He then came in and then they fit the tag to your ankle. So I remember when he did that, actually, they ask you to move your leg because they want to show it's real. And so I figured that obviously what's happened at some point is these dimwits have fitted a tag.
Yeah.
They fitted a tag to a false leg and someone's gone, fantastic. And I was like, okay, fair enough. So anyway, they attached it to my real live leg. And they fit it to your ankle. They talk you through the basics of how that works. And then they put like it's like a phone they put in your house.
Yeah, like a phone.
And it has like a receiver on it. And that is... They then get you to walk around the perimeter of your house.
I bet you didn't run up and down the road.
Pardon?
I bet you didn't run up and down the road.
No, I wasn't allowed outside. But the person came around with me. They were still with me the whole time. Yeah, yeah. So I think they've had that.
I ran up and down my mum's road. Went to the shop everywhere. Like, I ran everywhere.
Because they can tell you to go off and walk around the house. But because here's the thing. So I think what they do is they try and convince you.
So that you're creating...
They literally get you to walk into every corner of every room. And I think they do it to make you think. And I know that some guys did this from people speaking to people inside who'd previously had tag. They think that can tell, like, you're basically mapping out your house into the machine. But it's not quite how it works. This thing just picks up a signal and you're either in the signal or out. So... they figure that out but I remember, so one of the lads in Rochester, when he was on tag, he used to his house when he was on tag, he'd have a fag, so he'd have to be out the front door and he'd put his foot back through the cat flap so it was still inside because he was scared. He thought if you went out the front door with it on, the alarm would go off. But so no, they walk you around, make sure that it can pick you up in the house, and then they're off, and then you're in. And then so yeah, from 7 p.m. till 7 a.m. every night, I had to be at the house. And if I was out of range of the receiver in those designated hours, sort of overnight, an alarm would go off.
Yeah, the phone.
And so, yeah, you'd sort of, it sounds like a smoke alarm. I thought it was the smoke alarm the first time mine happened. I think I'd gone for like, I was sat, it was summer, so we were like having dinner out on the patio, which in must have been just out of range. And, and it went off. But so, yeah, they ring you and they go.
You're on patio, just out of range.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Do you have an excursion?
Hang on, you can't start having a go at me. But his boats, I'm fine with having digging in about. You are just as middle class.
No, I'm not going to take it.
Claire's not busy.
Did you have an exclusion zone, either of you?
No. So I guess, yeah, there are areas they can go. You can't go in the centre of town or something, is that?
Yeah. Normally related to where your offence might have taken place, yeah, or victims or something on those lines.
Okay, no. I wasn't allowed any contact with my
ODs. I didn't have no conditions.
You didn't have any additional conditions? Because some of the conditions they can put on are quite extreme. I mean, they can have notified. Did you have like a mobile phone? Like, you're only allowed one mobile phone?
I've got that.
Are you only allowed
one mobile? They have to take the IMEI off me. I guess my crime was sort of related.
But what do you reckon would actually happen if you get caught with two phones on you?
You could get recalled for sure.
Probably get recalled, yeah, I suspect. Yeah, for the nature of my crime and stuff, they would do, I think. So, I had to go through that. So I had to give them, I got a phone, but I had to give them the IMEI and my phone number and all that stuff. So they were quite...
I mean, some people have that you have to notify probation of any developing intimate relationship.
They say that. Yeah, they do say that, but I didn't anyway.
Did you have it as a written condition?
No.
You'd be on the phone every fucking day, but
they've got a polygraph. Polygraph, but you have to be willing to sit a polygraph for.
I imagine they probably don't get many takers for that, do they?
No.
If you're a willing participant. Okay.
It's not willing. It's just a condition.
We're going to put it, no.
Some people can't be in a car. You can't be a passenger in a car. Some I've seen.
What? Really?
Yeah.
That's mad.
That's ridiculous.
I mean, obviously, it all depends what your offence is. Yeah, but, of course. But some of the conditions. So, to be clear, so you've got a set of standard conditions, which everyone has. And that's like notify, you know, you've got to be staying in an approved place. You've got to be.
Report for probation.
Report, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then you've got additional conditions which can be added on dependent on relevant your crime. But yeah, they can be very onerous sometimes, but they're meant to be necessary and proportionate. That's the legal test.
Yeah, they're meant to be.
Still,
but yeah, so probation, I mean, there's something we touched on that, like probation is the one that, okay, so I'm still having to report. So you go, initially I had to go every week down, and that for me was a real ball ache, because it was,
you had to go all the way to Hastings. They didn't give you a that was your local
that was the closest, because we were in the middle of the house I was in was in the middle of the countryside, so that was it. So once a week I had to cycle to the nearest train station and then get a 40-minute train down to Hastings to go to meet the probation officer for a meeting that would, I think the quickest one I timed, because I did start timing them because I was like, this is mad, was 4 minutes long. I walked in.
But so much of it is actually just making sure you turn up.
Yeah, that, I mean, I get that.
Like
I get that, but it's 2018 at that point. Surely they can FaceTime me.
It's true.
No, but then you could be anywhere.
That's a waste of everyone's time.
Yeah. That's the point. They want to. I can totally see how it's a waste of time. And they have the opportunity to be more meaningful. And they probably cite that they are understaffed and under-resourced. But, I mean, some of it is about physically knowing where you are, isn't it? If you're FaceTiming.
And look, it's fine. Look, I accept it. Like, done a crime, you feel that. But, okay, for example, this week I had to go. I had to book 2 hours out of my working day, and you have to book it a month in advance. So you've got to guess at like a day that's good. You book that out. I had to literally run from, I'd finished seeing a client. I had to run to the station, half an hour to get to Stockwell, go and see my officer wasn't there. So I saw like the duty, didn't even know who I was really.
Yeah.
And they just went, oh, how's everything? And I went, yeah, it's fine. I told them I'd moved house. They took my new address. And I left, and I'm like, we can do that. I've been doing this for a year. I've not committed any offences. I've not caused any problems. Like, surely we can do this over an email, and I don't have to book 2 hours out of my working day to come and do it. And you just, that stuff where I go, I can deal with that. Some people would just get so fucked off with that and just sack it off.
Yeah.
Or just, you know, and it's just that started.
If I was to be, I'm not saying that it's a good system, but you are under sentence right now.
Yeah.
So it is part of your sentence, and to sort of say, I'm not trying to get like opinionated.
I know what you're saying.
But, you know, that is a very real thing, is that you are under sentence, and actually your probation appointments have become much less frequent over the course of that year. And your conditions are vaguely there. I mean, in reality, compared to a lot of people on...
Yeah, I agree. I understand what you're saying. So I completely understand. Look, it's part of the sentence. You should do it. All I'm saying is, for what anyone gets out of them, and I'm not the only one, it's a waste of time, money.
Totally.
On
everyone's
part.
They should be, if they're going to hold them, they can be more meaningful.
It's inconvenient for me. I'm saying there's a lot of money that goes into those, keeping those meetings in place. I don't know who's getting anything out of them. I'm not. Probation aren't. Anyway.
Also, you're probably not who that they are most aimed at.
No, I appreciate that. Yeah.
I mean, the people who kind of need to be supervised, you're not in that high risk category of you're not going to abscond anywhere. You're not, you know, you are working, you're ticking all the boxes, that there's a lot of people that aren't. I mean, I totally agree with you. And I think that they can be, well, I think you've had an experience as well. I don't know if you have as well, Boats, is that you have got an appointment and you're making all this effort, and then actually probation's not there, or they've changed the time, or you are at the whim of...
Which I just don't think helps the process at all in terms of...
But probation's under a massive crisis of changes.
Funding and all that kind of shit.
But for some people, it can be really onerous. And I mean, Boats, you didn't even know when your licence was ending. You were so infrequently attending.
I literally, like what Rob said, I used to just go on probation for literally 2 minutes. Just used to ask basic questions like, how are you, what have you been up to, work. And then literally I'd leave. Literally a waste of time. I felt like it was a waste of time for me. I didn't really get informed much about when I'd be finishing. Obviously, like what we spoke about before, when you knew when your licence was finishing, but that, I'd forgotten about that. So I expected my probation officer to inform me about when my next appointment was. When I actually finished my licence, I literally just went to one appointment, and then they said, I'll let you know if you're going to have another appointment. Didn't hear anything. So so I was just guessing I was finished. So here I am. And yeah. Still could.
Let's hope you're not London's most wanted.
Exactly. I wouldn't know.
Pod is being recorded at an undisclosed location for security reasons.
Yeah.
But outside of that, look, yeah, you're right. I mean, it's annoying, but for me at the moment, it's once a month. It doesn't really impact on... I feel like I was really lucky. Look, I came out to a really good support network. I mean, that was it. You know, I came out and my aunt and uncle said I could stay with them. And, I think I think my circumstances were not typical for your like average. Look, I went from, you know, you're one day you're in Rochester in prison, and then, you know, 2 days later it was, you know, it's start of August, I'm in my aunt and uncle's swimming pool in their garden, you know. So, and I completely appreciate how ridiculous
that was,
and it wasn't lost on me at the time. You're just like, well, one, I'm like really lucky, because but actually, do you know what, like, I get shit for this, but I actually didn't really care about that. Like, it was I was out at a nice house in a really nice surroundings, and so look, obviously that is nicer than being released into like a halfway house or like that kind of stuff, so it definitely helped. I'm not playing that down. I'm just saying, actually, like, it was just a bit weird anyway, and it was I'd not lived with my aunt and uncle before, so I think there was definitely an adjustment that comes into, like,
and it's still
I found it difficult to relax at first. I found it really difficult. Did you find it that first like week out weird?
I felt the first week was very hectic because like loads of people want to see you and you don't really have that much time to yourself. But as I said before,
so you moved back to South London,
yeah.
So, and all your mates and stuff,
yeah,
were, like, around there,
yeah.
See, that's different. So I was. You were away from everyone. I was completely sheltered. Yeah. So I had a few people coming out, but I think that probably helped because I would have found it difficult.
I would have thought that would have given you more reason to be more relaxed because I felt everyone was just suffocating me. Everyone wanted to see him. Everyone was saying, repeating the same story. Like I said to myself before, I was going to chill. And then everyone's on top of you asking. It took a while for everyone just to kind of leave you alone to your own devices.
I guess it's a bit of grass is greener, but I guess I was actually, I find it really hard to, I probably had maybe like 2 or 3 days where I was like, I'd just chill and it was nice and I want to play golf with my brother. And like, it was important to me to see family, swim with my brother and stuff. And then, but then I was like, right, I felt guilty about just sitting around the house doing nothing. I was like, right, I want to get out. I want to get working. I want to get back on with my life. So there is that sort of, like dual thing going on. If I want to chill and relax and just try and enjoy not being in prison, but then you're also like so conscious of like, well, I don't want to be a burden. I don't want to be sick. I'm not 18. I'm not like 19 where you're just like, oh, you can fuck around. I'm like, I'm 30 odd. I can't just be sat around being waited on hand and foot, having stuff paid for me. I had no money. I had 150 quid. And that doesn't go far. Even, you know, my family were really good about like paying for food and stuff. So I didn't have to like contribute to that initially, and they were really, really good in that sense. But I was also like, I don't want to, you know, I want to be able to go and get a train to go and see my mates up in London when that comes. That's, you know, 40 quid gone. So you're like, well, like, you know, by the time you've done that, I'm like, right, I need to go and pay for it myself. So
you think it'd be different if you released at different age?
Yes.
Like if I mean, relatively, you guys still pretty young.
Very young, young at heart.
Young looking. You cover the greys well. But
no, but like, she was talking to you there, but
do you dye your hair? I was just thinking that. Do you dye your hair?
No, that's just dark, babe. Well, I'm young. I'm still very, very young.
Fair play. I was actually just asking.
We're basically the same age, mate.
We're not, but yeah.
If you'd even been like a couple of years older, would that have felt stranger going? Would you have gone home? And would it have felt stranger?
I think for me and Rob especially, I think the fact that we don't have kids makes it easier.
Yeah.
So in terms of being in jail, regardless of age, if I didn't have a place to stay at, I would have went to my mum's.
Right.
So to get myself back on my feet, especially for tag, like if I didn't have any other approved address, I was always going to try and go there. So for me, it wouldn't really matter about the age because at the end of the day, you need to get on your feet.
Yeah.
Like, there's no point going out and struggling. Otherwise you're going to, for me, I'll get sucked in doing things I was doing before.
Yeah, exactly. No, you worry about that. Like, you sort of have faith in yourself, like, I've decided not to do this again. Mm. But then you're also, like, we're human, you know yourself. Like, if you surround yourself with those kind of people, I'm not saying for me, but I think for other people, you know, you can definitely see that. And I think for me, I think I was fairly confident that I was not going to go back into a life of crime. And to be fair, look, for 3 years leading up to going in, after being arrested, I haven't. So it wasn't like a pattern. But like, for me, I think it was a bit of a blessing and a curse being like out in the middle of the countryside away from everyone. It was good because it allowed me to like decompress and I didn't have what you had, which I'd have found difficult, I think. Mm-hmm. Like 10 people coming around day one.
Yeah.
Going, let's go get pissed. Let's do this. Let's do that. What was it like? What was this like? You just want to go.
Yeah, it's jarring.
Because you're used to spending 17 so hours a day in a room on your own.
Yeah.
So to come out to that, it was nice. And I was able to like sort of decompress a bit coming through. And then, try and get myself set up. But then equally, it was a bit, probably I felt a bit isolated. Like I think being out, that was the reality. But the reality is I was in a much better position than most. And I think more than anything, it's not the material stuff. It's not like the house stuff. It was the fact that I came out to like a really loving, supportive family who were like really supportive of me. And I didn't come out and I wasn't given a bollocking and I told you, you got to fucking sort yourself out now. Everyone was really nice and supportive and appreciated. I think it was going to be a tricky time.
That's probably the worst thing you could do to someone, I think. Yeah. Someone bollocked me, I'll just fuck them up.
And I think it does happen. It does happen. People come out and they're like, wow, you know, I think.
I think it's going to be tough love.
Particularly, I think, just speaking to people with partners and stuff, I think that's where it happens more. It's less like parents and that kind of stuff. It's more like people that come out and they might have a strained relationship with a partner already. And that one can be really tricky when you've got kids and stuff involved. But no, I was, thankfully none of that. I was very, very lucky I came out. The worst thing that happened to me, my aunt and uncle will kill me for saying this. So I came out, they were so sweet. They'd done up a spare room in their house and made that like my room. They'd hung some of my photos up while I'd been away. But they'd moved house while I was inside. And I'd left all my stuff at their old house. And as they're moving, they obviously only had like one suitcase left there. So they put as much tickets in that and the rest went in bin bags. And then as they were leaving, my uncle, bless him, was obviously trying to be proactive. I think he'd probably been told he wasn't pulling his weight. So he's gone, right, I'm going to do a quick trip to the charity
shop. Oh, shit.
And my aunt's gone, yeah, it's all the stuff in the black bags, which there was stuff. Oh. So I came back and I think I had two Hawaiian shirts and a pair of white jeans I'd bought on a holiday to Croatia hanging up in the
and
wardrobe.
And
I was
survived.
Like, where's the rest of it? And yeah. It had all gone to the charity shop, but they helped me get some new stuff. But I was like, that was as bad as it got for me. So if that's the case, I was doing pretty well, I think.
I mean, what we haven't really said is what happens if you breach your license.
Well, yeah. Largely, unless it's very minor, I think, you know, you get a recall. So you get taken back to prison for...
Potentially up to the end of your sentence. Unless the parole board... let you out sooner.
Yeah.
But so I think, yeah, one we haven't touched on actually about, we've talked about this, you're not allowed to go abroad. So I'm still not allowed to go abroad. I think all of this stuff is usually at the discretion of your probation officer. Usually what most people say is unless it's for a family wedding, you're pretty much, you are grounded. So I need to dig out my
passport. I've gone away illegally while I've been on license, but even on my last sentence, I said to my probation officer, can I go Ibiza with my friends? And she was like, yeah, fine. So I think sometimes
I've asked two of mine for mates' weddings.
I've not heard that.
She let me go. She let me go Ibiza. And I actually told her.
The other times you're a charmer, mate.
Huh?
You're a charmer.
Yeah.
Oh, it was a her, was it? Hang on.
Yeah, it was a question.
Hang on. We are, this is falling into place, isn't it? Some kind of deal struck.
No.
Well, you're making license sound quite easy, to be honest with you.
License ain't easy because, like what we said, some people see it as they've got you by the balls. Like, for some people who find it difficult to not commit crimes, it's like, you literally can't.
Do you feel like a nagging in the back of your...
I didn't, but I know some people that do. They feel like, I can't do this because I'm on license, I can't do that. Because some people are just genuine risk takers. I try not to be, but...
Wink.
There was no wink. I think I didn't feel a nagging. Do you know what I think it gets you is when it gets brought up. So there are certain circumstances where... So, like, okay, going for a job. Having to declare that you are, like, disclosure. So my general experience is people have been really, really good about that. I've not really, off the top of my head, had a bad experience where someone's been a prick about it or taken issue with it, which they could do, which they wouldn't necessarily being a prick being, but like,
yeah,
I've not had that. But it's in your head, it's an awkward one because you're like, right, when do I say it? When do I bring it up?
Yeah.
What's great? Is it, you know, then you're worried like, oh, is that me? And so that's on like a, you know, going for jobs. That's when you're dating someone, you know, when like, you know, if you're dating someone, they're like, oh, let's go to Paris or, you know, let's go for a little weekend away somewhere.
I mean, both of you've had relationships since you come out of custody.
Yeah. I think even with people in relationships, with friends or with partners, I think that's always something that you just get out of the way early doors.
Right.
You just tell them. Approach, yeah. You just tell them early because there's no point because people can just be busy and Google you or find, people can find out, there's ways to find out. It's better just to let people know, give them their chance to decide what they want to do.
Just be upfront about it.
Yeah. I've never preemptively Googled someone I've gone on a date with thinking that they might have.
You've not done your due diligence, Claire. Well, you've been, well.
I don't think I've been dating since Google.
Ask Jeeves, I think, back then, wasn't it?
Oh my God,
Ask Jeeves. I was checking out their MySpace account.
Yeah. No, but you'll be surprised. People they probably do CRB checks.
CRB
checks for a date.
It's a figure of speech. Like,
oh, okay.
CRB checks. So, like, if you meet a girl,
it's a DBS now, anyway.
Yeah, it's a DBS.
In the MC world, we call that due diligence.
So, say, like, if I met a girl that Rob knew, I'd call him to get a background check. That's what people call it.
Get a reference.
Get a reference.
Yeah, so that's what people do.
But yeah, you do that. I think.
And did you get any funny reactions?
On that note, I think I definitely was probably guilty of probably saying it too soon at times because you're a bit like, you're so...
On
like,
your Tinder profile.
Yeah. getting into just going to going on dates in prison bad shirt boy on in a prison probation. Shirt with those striped shirts.
Your profile picture. Yeah. I'm bars. Your mugshot.
My mugshot's actually quite good. I don't photograph well as a rule. And that
on other people meant
bad.
To tell you that. On other people meant to tell you when you look
well
good.
They have I've got a lot of compliments about it, yeah.
On your I swear on your prison card that was on your door, you look like my man from EastEnders. Do you remember what I told you? What was his name? He was Barry from EastEnders. Yeah, do you remember? No. Do you remember when I told you that? Because obviously in jail, on your door is a picture of you.
Isn't Barry bald?
No.
Barry had it. I mean, it was thinning.
You remember?
Mine is not.
He was Pat's husband, isn't it?
No, that's Frank.
That's Frank.
No.
Hey, Frank. Paul. Barry was the one that got pushed off a cliff.
Yeah, but who was
And it? He's in extras and stuff.
Yeah, but whose husband was he?
Janine. Janine pushed him off a cliff, didn't she? That's Barry.
Janine.
Maybe I'm getting... I don't watch EastEnders, but...
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
But anyway...
That's what you look like. That's the picture
bad,
you're
very
about.
Bad photo, that must have been, because I look...
But that's the,
like
is that
Barry
not the same photo you were talking about?
Maybe Beppe. No, you're thinking of Beppe, that handsome Italian one. Yeah, that's...
Right. You wish.
Good knowledge.
There's someone who doesn't know, I was going to say.
No, a lot of the characters. How do we get onto that?
Because you were talking about the photo.
Disclosure, dating.
Disclosure. So yeah, I think that's it. Yeah, I probably was guilty at times of when you meet people it like, but yeah, because you're like anxious. But it's what you say, like, you know, you want to avoid that awkwardness where possible because it is. And I think we talked about it. There were some people you'd come out and they're like, "So what have you been up to?" And like, you know what I've been up to?
Yeah, you know what I've been.
You fucking idiot. Yeah. So and you get a bit sick of that. You get a bit sick of people. Asking you the same kind of
same
stuff
questions.
All the time, but that goes.
Do you know what annoys me?
So what you've decided to do is then have a podcast with all those questions.
But sorry to cut you, but yeah. You know what annoys me? What people say to me now? I could be out partying, people will say, "Oh, don't go back." People like hug me, be like, "Oh, don't go back."
As if they're going
to
be.
As if I'm trying to go back. Like, yeah. I think that's so dumb. Like, oh, just yeah. Don't go back.
People
like,
say stupid out. Things. Well meaning. So people dumb. Are well meaning, but they don't think and say stupid
how can
shit.
That be? How can you mean what to say to someone? Stay out. Like, obviously, I'm trying
as if
to.
That's going
to
make a difference.
Exactly.
Like them.
People are idiots, mate. Yeah, some true. People are idiots.
Yeah.
Did you lose friends in the process?
Yeah, 100%. More as in me cutting off people, I think.
Like on release, you're like, I haven't got time for this.
Yeah, 100%. But that was way before. Like that
before
was,
your release?
Yeah, that was before my release. As in my head. As in separating yourself from people, like trying to stay on a straight and narrow, staying away from bad influences, etc. Or people that you may have felt hadn't really supported you.
Did you find, I don't know about... So much for you both. I mean, you mentioned before that you have known other people that have gone to prison and that was not something like completely unusual for.
No.
So I guess there wasn't that novelty factor when you came out of like, oh my God, you know, you weren't the gossip you'd been to prison.
No. Whereas people still knows you though. Still
knows it.
Yeah.
But I guess, Rob, for you and your circle, did you find that people clung on to be part of the drama?
Definitely. I think you used it to varying degrees. I haven't seen it too much, but definitely I think there's people don't necessarily do a very good job of hiding how excited they are to hear about some bits and pieces, which is, like, fine. I get it. Like, you sort of deal with that. I think what I found an odd one to deal with is... There are people I've encountered since that have tried to sort of make themselves seem close to the crime. They sort of like said, "Oh, it could have been me," or, you know, "Oh, I got a narrow escape," and I sort of almost like paint themselves as being like, "Well, I was a lucky one. I was sort of one of the guys, but I got away with it." And you know, like, "Oh God, I had a narrow escape," and I'm like, "I've literally never fucking met you in my life." Like, yeah. So, and that's just like, and I've had that a couple of times, and I'm like. It's awkward because you're like, they'll talk about it openly in front of you. And I'm like,
actually,
do
fine,
I want
to,
like, part
no
of
much.
You wants to call them out and go, who the fuck are you, mate? Like, I've never met you before. Like, pretty sure, you know, if you were, in your words, this close to getting sent down yourself, I probably would have heard of you at some point. And so that's a funny one. And then, yeah, there is, I think just because of the nature of within like my big wide, like social network, I think, I can't think of anyone that sort of had similar. So there was just a big interest anyway. And then I think, you know, whether it's perceived or not, whether it's more in your head, you know, I think there's people that, you know, for example, I was dating someone for a bit who had me saved in their phone as the prisoner. So that's quite a big tell that, like, part of the excitement of being like that. Seriously. And we were dating while I was on tag and stuff. And you know, I don't want to like badmouth anyone. And look, again, this could all, you know, they may well have a very different take on it. But, you know, I sort of perceive that part of it at least was like the thrill of like telling someone, oh, he's, you know, like he's on tag and all this kind of stuff. Your face is going. But I think there's definitely an element of that. And, but like probably at the time I was like, that's not the end of the world to me. I mean, if that's, you know, that's,
is it a fine line between talking to friends and family and recounting things that have happened in a sort of supportive, therapeutic way, and then talking amongst friends and you're sort of like the zoo animal that everyone wants to.
Yeah. I think like you can't have your cake and eat it a bit with that. Like, you can't complain about that and then go and do a podcast about it. In blunt terms. So I think, it's one of those ones where it's a bit annoying, but look, you, at the end of the day, I'm obviously absolutely fine talking about it. And all 8 of our listeners are absolutely over the moon that we are because they get to enjoy this.
And did you get the emotional support? Like, Boats, you've described it before as like you can see, I don't know if you were talking about yourself or referring to other people, as to sort of like having kind of PTSD, you know, or elements of, I mean, it has been a traumatic experience.
I think a lot of people struggle after jail. Like, I know people that I know someone that was struggled with depression after jail because he couldn't come to terms with being not in that routine he was in. Because some people get institutionalized, they get so used to one thing and then they can't adapt to change because on the outside there's so much change going on, and some people struggle, little things. But a lot of it is financial. I think a lot of people struggle with when you come out. It's the financial strain that people can struggle with. That plays a big part, I think.
Well, I think it's, I mean, look, I can only talk for myself. I've been quite open with my family. I really, really struggled. Actually, like on tag was fine because I had a bit of structure there and I was with my aunt and uncle. So, and you know, I've said before, but I think it's that kind of loving environment, that like kind of caring environment. So you've got people around you that care. I know Boats, you come out, you live with your mum for a bit and that kind of stuff. I think, you know, that sort of helped. And then for me, a bit of a watershed was when my tag came off and I was just so keen to get back to London and go and sort of basically try and start my life again. I'd done my personal training qualification, so I was really keen to get, I'd managed to get that done while I was on tag. I'd not finished it while I was in prison, but I got it completed when I was out on tag. So I was like, right, well, this is like the next chapter in my life. I'll go and get that started. I moved back to London. Strangely ended up, like a really good friend of mine, Sophie, was really kind, like let me sort of, she was like, you can stay in my spare room and basically pay next to no rent initially because she knew I was skinned, and just, you know, let me stay there while I got back on my feet. And I started, you know, long story short, so ended up getting the job in the gym I'm at now, which is a really, really good setup. And I think, you know, so on paper, you know, anyone outward looking in would go, oh, Rob sorted himself out. And you know, he's out of prison, he's back, he's got a job, he's sort of back on with it. And I think, like, looking back, I think that 6 months from sort of January to June this year were probably the 6 hardest months of the whole process for me. Right. I found it really, really difficult to readjust. And I was suddenly back up in London. You had that weird familiarity. I'm in a flat I'd actually lived in before. You're back up and around and you're like, oh, I'm back into it. But I think we've talked about it before. People move on. Like, in that sort of year and a half since previously been living in London, like the mates I was hanging out with, some of them were still inside, some of them had moved on and got girlfriends, and that's significant change. So I suddenly felt like I didn't really have that many people to hang out with, and it's like a really lonely period. I was working long hours at the gym, you know, being a PT, you're in at 6 in the morning, leaving at 9 o'clock at night some days. And that was, I'm not a psychologist, I wouldn't want to go out and say I was suffering from depression, but I think, you know, I could, you know, I went long periods of not seeing people emotionally. I found it very, very difficult. And that was really hard. And I've said this, look, I had the best possible opportunity coming out. You know, I came out to family. I was, you know, given a bit of help with like a little bit of money initially. I had friends who were letting me crash for next to nothing in their houses and stuff. So all of those big stresses, and I found a job, all those removed, and I still found it really hard. So I think looking back, that I definitely reflect and go, fucking hell, like imagine if you didn't know how you where you're going to live next week, or imagine if you didn't know how you're going to pay for food tomorrow. Like, so I think that gives you an appreciation, I think, of how difficult it is being Cambodian. And for no like reason. So like even, like I say, like looking out, people might go, well, he's got no reason to be struggling with that. But there's just this weird readjustment of like, oh, I don't know why.
It must be super overwhelming. Difficult. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think that was, I think, yeah, my experience. And, you know, I think I dealt with that by working long hours, going out, getting as pissed, doing as much coke as I could on the weekends. Like that's, and unfortunately that's like that is the reality of it. That's how a lot of people deal with that. That had been after my dad died, that was my coping mechanism. And you sort of old habits die hard, I think, a bit with that. And so you can see how people fall into those kind of habits.
Yeah.
And look, thankfully I had, like I said, you know, with a lot of help from friends and family and stuff, you sort of see yourself right and you know, you pull yourself together and I'm, you know, thankfully in a really good place now. And I think, look, I put a lot of that down to, again, talking about it is a big one. I think lots of people don't. People suffer in silence. And I think I've found it so much easier since I've come out and gone, look, yeah, I was struggling with this. And people appreciate it. I think a lot of people are just oblivious to it. Like I said, a lot of my mates have said to me since, they're like, oh, we thought you were fine. Like, you're back, you're working. And I think, you know, so I think definitely talking about that helped. And then like, you know, being in the gym, like exercising a lot is just incredibly helpful, giving some structure to your, I mean, it's easy for me, I work there, but you know, as I'm sure you see the same boats. I mean, you're sort of PT as well. And we've both talked about, I guess, yeah, the benefits of that, like regular exercise, trying to keep some structure in, doing all the good things well, eating well, training and all that kind of stuff, I think helps. And you get to a point where I'm actually in a really good place now, which is nice.
Yeah.
But that just shows sometimes, that just shows even like, it takes time as well. Like, even though when you get out of the gate, like you are free technically, but it sometimes it's mentally, you have to like unlock that kind of, that thing holding you back as well, innit? That just, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. And then, look, I think some of this comes like, you lots talk about process. PTSD, this stuff can be on a delayed fuse. Like,
yeah.
You know, people are, you know, I'm not the only one, like people have dramas going on. And I think while that drama's going on, or while they're trying to deal with that and going to prison, you know, like people, we've met so many people in there that were in broken marriages or split relationships and dealing with kids and all that shit. And when you're going through it, when you're like going into prison, you're in like deal with it mode. So you just go, right, you can be pushed through that. And so you don't actually deal with the emotional side of it. You're just like trying to sort the logistics of where my kid's going to go, what's my wife going to do, all that kind of stuff. And then it's actually then like the aftershocks of that, the like consequences come when you're out and everything is, in inverted commas, fine. So I think, yeah, that's definitely that period afterwards. You know, to answer your original question, no, I was given no emotional support. Not that I felt I was obliged to it from whatever, but I think, yeah, you should have.
But can emotional support even really help you? Because I feel like the battle is just, it's on your own. As much as you can have as much help as you want, you've got to deal with things yourself.
I don't think it can solve it for you, but I think having someone to, like, people to talk to about it. And look, the reality is, sometimes you don't want to burden your mates with it. Like, you want to, your mates, you have like a, I found this with, you know, like bereavements. Both my parents have died. So I always found it much harder to talk to my mates about it, because you're a bit like, and you, they're awkward because they don't know what to say. You don't know what to say to them. Also, when you're meeting them, you're like, this is who I have a laugh with. So I saw a therapist for like 2 years and I found it really, really helpful in terms of just having someone to just offload all your shit onto and not worry about, fucking, I've taken up 2 hours of their time talking about me. That's what podcasts are for.
No, but I guess probation, if they had the resources, could,
I think they could, yeah,
could be a place to talk about that, because with people who understand, you know, some of the things that you're talking about, isn't it, as well, I guess, that sometimes with your friends on the outside, they don't get it, do they?
You also edit with your friends, I think. I find that, like, subconsciously or not, when you're talking to someone, you're like this the difficult things I'm talking about, you're like your innermost feelings. And you're like, well, do I want to say that to them? Are they going to say something to so-and-so? You know, I might be wanting to say, I'm happy for them to know, but I don't want anyone else to. And then you're like, are they really going to? They might let slip, or they might talk to someone. So you end up just not quite doing that. And yeah, I found the benefits of paying someone £50 to have to sit in a chair and shut up and listen to you. Quite useful. So yeah, look, I think that did help, and I think it could, like I would have benefited. I think in that immediate aftermath of maybe having someone to just, you also make things so worse in your head. The more you just, I think what you said, Boats, I'm not saying you're wrong. I find with myself, I'll often like catastrophize it, so I'll just assume the worst possible option on some things. And if I've not got someone who's just going, no, don't be an idiot, that's not the case, you just take that as gospel and truth. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. You're naturally very level-headed, like, chilled out guy. I am busy. So you are busy. I don't know whether it helps some people or not. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
On happier notes, as we've said.
Yeah, keep it light.
You are.
We're down to three listeners at this point. Depressing.
No, they've just done that thing where, you know, you can speed up the listening speed. I think they just probably
on Netflix, they're going to roll that
one and a half or two. Yeah.
As soon as they hear my voice, they can just hit fast forward.
You are officially free. You are off license. It is the end of your sentence.
Yeah.
How do you feel?
To be honest, it doesn't really feel any different. It actually doesn't.
Sometimes it's such a
humorous, mate. Say
so
it feels
underwhelming
fucking
with you sometimes.
You know, people say it's because I'm monotone, isn't it? Because I talk with one tone. That's why people say.
And because you say phrases like "it feels exactly the same."
No, but it does because I was doing. I wasn't doing anything different. I wasn't.
You don't feel like you never felt at risk of going back to prison.
No, I genuinely didn't. No, because I'd kind of.
Do you know anyone that's been recalled?
Yeah, I know loads of people that have been recalled.
So you know how easy it can be.
Yeah, yeah. But I just, in my head, I just thought, all right, as long as I turn up to probation, as long as I don't get nicked, that's how straightforward it was to me in my head. Obviously, other things can happen, but as long as I turn up to probation on time, never late, never miss it, and I don't get nicked, I shouldn't have a problem.
But all of those things are like within, well, turning up to probation is in your control.
Yeah.
Not getting nicked.
That's slightly
okay,
in my
it's
control.
Slightly in your control whether you make choices to put yourself in situations. Yeah. But, you know, I know of people that have been nicked from wrong time, wrong place, not because of their actions. Yeah. You didn't feel...
I'd jump in on that with Blake. One thing is that I think maybe someone listening to this might go, well, obviously it's in your control whether you get nicked or not. I think to maybe give a bit of a nuance to that, a bit of appreciation, is that, like... You can have no intention of committing crime, but this is what we talk about being with like the wrong people You could be at a pub and someone kicks off at you and you're not doing anything. And what you're going to do? So like, I think it's important to point out that like people get recalled for having a little scrap in a pub or like doing this, which is not like they've got the best of intentions. And that's so I think it's an important point to touch on that. It's not just fucking idiots that end up back in. It's like, it's easier than you think.
And also,
the point is you don't have to have committed a criminal offence. Yeah. You could be suspected or you can just breach one of your conditions. And that can be turning up half an hour late to your curfew. I mean, you know,
and also the people I'm around, were aware when I was on license, so if any of them did do bad things, they wouldn't do it while they were around me, or people would always
respectful
know.
Of
yeah,
it.
Yeah. So I feel like it was easy as long as I did the things that I knew I had to do for me, which was turning up to probation and not getting nicked.
Well, that's good that you felt in control of it yourself. Yeah.
Yeah, I did feel.
And was that the same on your first sentence?
Yeah, I did feel in control. Yeah. Same thing, just don't breach. Don't get nicked. So I thought it was quite straightforward. But obviously some people have it different to me. So yeah, I can't say there's one method for everyone.
And so far so good for me. I've got...
How long have you got to go, Rob, at this point?
January 20th. I do know my date. January 20th, 2020.
That's calm. That's soon anyway.
That's quite nice visually.
Yeah, visually.
20th
nice
of the
paper,
first,
yeah.
2020, yeah. That's a good date to choose, I'd say, yeah.
Yeah, I was happy with that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not bad.
But yeah.
All right, well, we started sort of having some... Rob got a bit deep there, didn't he?
He did.
Yeah, sorry.
And we were saving our Go Deep episode for the last...
Yeah.
Sounds worse than it was. We're saving our reflections for next week.
Yeah.
But you got a
little taste there.
Little taste there.
So if that wasn't for you, probably don't listen to the next episode.
All right, cheers.
All right, well, we'll see you then.
Bye,
guys. Then.
Cheers, guys.
Rob's busy.
Hi guys, it's Rob here. Thanks very much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode.
just to give you a quick reminder that if you haven't already, to subscribe to make sure you get the new episodes as they come out every Monday, and leave us a review with any of your feedback wherever you listen to the pod. You can also get us on our Twitter and Instagram accounts, which are at Banged Up Podcast. You can send us any questions you want for our weekly Q&A, and also catch some other bits and pieces like excerpts from my diary. Okay, thanks very much. Catch you soon.